Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Heck, welcome to the show. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here at your service to talk about car repair problems. You can really do just about anything you want. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When we talk about cars, what's important is it's a kind of a give-and-take thing. So you call me up and you tell me we're going to discuss your symptoms. So you're going to say it vibrates, or you're going to say it pulls to the right, or you can say it doesn't start first thing in the morning, or it doesn't start cold, or it doesn't start hot, or I have air blowing only out of my defrost vents and nowhere else, and those kinds of things. So year, make, and model, approximate mileage, and then we're going to talk about the symptoms. What's not important is how many times you've tried to have it fixed. You know, my husband did this and he did that. All we know from that is that whatever your husband did didn't fix it. So I don't want to go left when I really need to stay center of the road. It's important to know that, and the guys are the worst ones. It's not the ladies, it's the guys. I had a guy tell me that he had it died at idle, and then he proceeded to tell me that he had replaced every single thing that has to do with the idle, and in his case, I think there was 8 or 9 sensors and soldiers and things that actually do something and sensors that actually tell the computer what it is. And so finally, I said to him, you know, I'll look at it for you for free. We opened the hood, and there was 3 of us, and one of them reached in and plugged in a vacuum line and shut the hood and said goodbye to you. And so he had spent, in our estimation, he had spent $200+ buying parts. And the noise was like thunder underneath the hood. When you opened the hood, all you heard was this. That's all you heard. I mean, all of us could hear it. So, and it was a big line to his PCV valve, so he wouldn't have really noticed it. But one of the things that was there that I thought was unusual, he never mentioned it had a rough idle. And it would have had, and it did have a rough idle because the motor was getting way too much air. So we need that ratio of air and fuel. So one part fuel, 14 parts air. Well, when you have a big, huge vacuum leak, then you have 20 parts of air to one part of fuel. So we want 14 to 1, not 20 to 1 or 25 to 1. So those are the kinds of things that we talk about. 602-508-0960. Another issue that we talk about is the YouTube University. It's just a bad idea to go to YouTube and try to fix your car, and here's why. You're going to spend your hard-earned money guessing on a repair and someone's told you this is what's wrong with your car, and you've never met that person before. They could be a baker, a candlestick maker, a doctor. They could be a construction guy. It could be a woman who's disguising herself as a technician, or a man who's disguising himself as a technician. And the idea is that you're guessing with other people's ideas, but you're guessing with your own money. So we have taken it upon ourselves to look at a lot of the symptoms that we have and we're fixing. And we're looking on YouTube, and you can't imagine what we're finding. A good example is that I had this gasoline-powered leaf blower. And I couldn't figure out why intermittently it would start and not start. And so I had been working on it for about an hour or so. So I thought, well, I'll go to YouTube, just like everybody else. So it says, you know, do you have spark? Yes, I do. Do you have fuel? Yes, I do. Well, then it has to be, and then all of a sudden everybody's chiming in and saying, well, it can have spark. You need to check the magneto. No, it does have spark. Well, how do you know it has spark? Well, because I put a screwdriver in the end of the spark plug wire, and I had my wife hold on to the screwdriver, and I pulled it, and she went, ah, and so I know I have spark. So anyway, after I got done with YouTube, I hadn't made any progress whatsoever, but everybody had suggested I replace, you know, the carburetor and the magneto and the spark plug and the wire and everything imaginable. So I was sitting there looking at it, and I thought, you know what I'm going to do? When it doesn't start, I'm going to spray a little carb cleaner inside the carburetor to see if it will start. So I was unscrewing the wing nut to take the air filter off, and I noticed the whole assembly was moving. So I took the air cleaner off, and I thought, wow. And so I grabbed a hold of the carburetor, and I wiggled it back and forth. And it's not supposed to wiggle back and forth. Huh. So I pulled a big plastic cowling off of it. There's two bolts that hold the carburetor to the motor, and both of them were loose. And so I knew I had a lean condition, but I didn't know why. Well, I was sucking air through that particular area. So I tightened up those two screws. Boom. It still runs. And my wife loves it because she doesn't have to start it, you know, try to start it for 2 hours. And she's really good with her leaf blower anyway. So, and she won't do the backpack one because it's too heavy for her. But I told her this one has like 200 miles an hour. I mean, it'll, you know, it'll blow the shoelaces off your shoes. And she says, I'm not using that. I'll use my little one. I say, fine. But if the rest of you, if you buy your wife a really nice, easy start leaf blower, then she'll really like it and you don't have to do it. That's my marriage counselor part of me. Let's go to the phones. Who's on the phone?
Oh, we have Grant.
Grant, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I listen to your show every weekend going to work.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that.
Yes. So I got a 2001 GMC 3500 Sierra.
Okay.
8.1 liter.
Okay.
And every now and again, when the truck is warm, I go to start it up.
Okay.
And it just turns and turns and turns, and then I get a little tiny backfire through the exhaust pipe.
Okay.
And then start it up again, or go to start it up again, and it fires right up.
Do you see any black smoke?
Yes.
So when you're trying to crank it, and up until the, and this is called a hard hot start. Okay, that's what we're going to call it, a hard hot start. It's the terminology that makes it really easy for us to grasp this. So when you start, when you try to start it when it's hot, it runs, it does it run rough and then smooth out and you see black smoke?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's...
Yeah, it like really hesitates and it acts like it's going to die and then boom, perfect.
But in the morning cold, never happens.
No.
Okay.
No.
So what's the difference when it's hot and when it's cold? And clearly we have if you see black smoke, that's going to send me in the direction that we're running really, really rich. So we have an abundance of fuel. So
correct.
If that's the case, now this is how I'm thinking out loud. I'm thinking this way. If the fuel pressure regulator was bad, that would be a hard cold start because the fuel pressure regulator overnight would allow the fuel pressure to drop to zero. So when you go to start it, when you crank on it, the fuel pump is only going to fire up for the first 2 or 3 seconds. If it doesn't see the car start, then it shuts down. So you'd have to cycle your key 2 or 3 times, and boom, it starts right up. Now, the fuel pressure regulator should give you poor fuel economy, but if it's leaking into the motor, then it would help. It would cause a cold start as well. So the difference is the heat of the engine. So do I have an injector leaking? Do I have a loss of fuel pressure? See, the loss of fuel pressure doesn't work because you see black smoke. So the black smoke is a rich condition.
I mean, it sounds extremely rich out the exhaust pipe. Yes.
Does it smell?
And my tailpipe is black.
Okay, I'm not worried about the tailpipe because your 8.1 should be black. I mean, they all with catalytic converters are black. The only thing, you know, an injector, a fuel pressure problem, a fuel pressure regulator problem, I think what really needs to be done is somebody needs to hang a fuel pressure gauge on that and let you rent it for a day or so.
Okay.
And do you have a repair shop that you deal with?
I actually do probably 120% of my own repairs, Mark.
Okay. So well,
I do have a regulator. And it's actually the fuel pump has been replaced. And then from there, I went to a camshaft sensor, which didn't do anything.
Yeah, I would have told you that.
So, yeah, I know.
The question really is when you get into this mode, is it too much fuel or too little fuel, or is the spark there or not? Now, the backfire kind of bothers me because that's the only time it happens, right?
Yes, it's a little. It's just a little, not a big bang, just a little poof, kind of like a stinker.
And, yeah.
You know, and then it, you know, the truck, and it's intermediate. I mean, it's not all the time. Okay. So.
Well, it's you still got to check for spark and fuel, so let's eliminate fuel first. Just go rent or buy a fuel pressure gauge. You're going to screw it right onto the Schrader valve of your 8.1. Hopefully you'll get a 4-foot hose. You'll run it through the windshield portion of the hood and tape it to the outside of the windshield. And so you can see it. Now, when you turn on the key, the fuel pressure should jump. And I think that's a 40-pound system plus or minus, but you'll get the hang of that real quick. So you turn it on, you just look at the fuel pressure and see where it's at, and then crank it over. If there's a difference in fuel pressure between hot and cold, then you found the problem. But I still don't understand the backfire, but the backfire will explain itself after you fix it. So if it's a lean condition and the fuel pump's not working or the relay's bad, now that's something else on your 8.1. How many miles are on it?
Oh, geez, almost 400,000.
Okay. There. I'm pretty sure, and I'm going off memory here, that there, underneath the fuel pan, underneath the fuse box, or take the cover off the fuse box, there's a bunch of relays. And there's going to be one for air conditioning and one for fuel pump. I think you should switch those two. They look alike, and they're the same part number. So grab the fuel pump, put it in the air conditioning, grab the air conditioning, put it in the fuel pump, and see if that makes a difference. But it's this is a hard, hot start. And the hot and the backfire, I don't want to sit on those. I just know that we need to determine spark or fuel. Now, as far as spark is concerned, are you oftentimes with somebody when this hot start is created?
No.
Okay. All right.
No, unfortunately not.
What you might have to do is pull the spark. This got coil over ignition. Does this have coil sitting on the spark plugs?
Yes.
That makes it really tough. That makes it really tough.
You know, and I'm leaning more towards spark because I put some E3 spark plugs in it. And, oh, gosh, I probably got less than 30,000 miles out of the plugs. And then it just started running rough. So I put original OEM plugs in it. And smoothed everything right out. So,
well, that doesn't help you any because you don't have the E3s in there anymore.
So, no, I don't.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that doesn't, you know, the spark plugs. The problem, I mean, was the problem there with the E3s?
No, they weren't. I was just trying to get a little more fuel economy out of it. But
okay. Well, you wasted your money on those spark plugs with three sparks because all it does is take one and divide it by three. And most of the time it won't even fire all three. It'll fire one or two, but you can't see that because, you know, that happens in the cylinder. So it's kind of like a garden hose. You know, you turn the garden hose on full blast, and that's it. So if you divide the garden hose by three, then you're just going to get three. So I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. I do know that you have to get to spark or fuel first. And and that's kind of, but if you've already done the crankshaft, then, or camshaft, then I would be plugging in a scanner and I would go drive it when it's hot and shut it off and I would look for crank signal and cam signal and that they're synchronized. Now, you can do a crankshaft sensor, but you have to know the harmonic balancer drives the camshaft sensor, the crankshaft sensor, and if the harmonic balancer is spinning or wobbling after 400,000 miles, that can cause an electrical storm that you can't recover from. Then the question is why is it hot and not just cold? And I say, we don't care about the question. Once we fix it, we'll answer all those questions. But we're still back to spark and fuel, and I got to run. 18 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name's Mark Salem, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Let me tell you real quick about Strictly Diesel. Strictly Diesel is a shop up in North Phoenix. They're on Pinnacle Peak and I-17. They're really, really good at what they do. They are diesel die-hard service repair and parts guys. They work on foreign and domestic light diesel trucks, so they don't work on the real big dogs. They just work on the light diesel trucks. Nevertheless, if you have a diesel truck and you've got a Chevy, Ford, or Dodge and you can't fix it, you can't make it work, or no one else can, then Strictly Diesel would be a great place I'd go. It's A-plus rated at the Better Business Bureau. I-17 in Deer Valley, or actually, I-17 in Pinnacle Peak. I'm looking at two things at the same time. And if you want, you can go to my best car repair shops at marksalem.com, and you can pick up the information from Strictly Diesel. Okay, have we got any callers, Gil? Gil? Oh, boy. Okay, lines are open. Gil's talking to me now, and I was kind of worried about that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 is the phone number, and you're welcome to call if you want. And when it comes to car repair, the communication, just like Grant and I had, that's kind of important. We need that kind of crosstalk between the shop and you. And it's just not a good idea for you wives to come in and tell us what your husband said. Likewise, it's not the other way around as well. It's just symptoms. We're just talking really about symptoms, and so I'm unclear as to why it is that his particular truck has this hard start. But the fundamentals, you have to go to the fundamentals. I need spark or fuel. But it makes it difficult because he doesn't have a distributor, so to speak. So there was a time 100 years ago when we used to do this. We used to take these little bitty neon lights, and I don't remember where we got them, but I think they're Christmas tree lights, and we would take one of the wires and we would wrap it around the spark plug wire. And then we put the light on the dash. And when the truck was running, you could see the flash of this little bitty neon light. And so it would tell you you had spark. Now, one of the things we used to do as a kid is we'd take six or eight of those. We'd wrap them around each spark plug, and we'd put them in sequence, 1-8-4-3-6-5-7-2. We'd put them in a big piece of wood. And so at idle, the lights would go in a circle, in a circle, in a circle, in a circle. And then when you got throttle up, then it would change. So as a result of that, it was kind of fun, but it was just an... Today, it's kind of a way to determine if you have spark. If you have spark, you can usually go to the ignition module, and there's usually an RPM signal there. And so you can interface that RPM signal. But if you have a scanner, not a code reader, but a scanner, then that's something that you would typically need to do. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When should you bid the work that you have? That's a tough question, because most people are overwhelmed by the thought of taking their car to a couple of different places. Let me do some self-defense for car expense in front of that. Let me talk about that. When people call me, and folks, trust me when I tell you, I get lots of phone calls, and I don't mind. They come to work, or they'll send me an email. The issue is when you take it in to any shop, whether it's a dealer, an independent, or a chain store, you go in and you get a big laundry list. Now, the other day, a lady came in, and she said, I need motor mounts, I need lower control arms. So I'm going to give her the symptoms for both. And my question to her is, do you have these? So as far as the motor mounts are concerned, do you ever hear a thump on the motor from the motor on hard acceleration from a stop? She said no. I said, when you put it into reverse and then you take it out of reverse, there would be a distinct thump underneath the hood. No. Do you ever hear a thump from underneath the hood? No. Okay. Now, on the lower control arm bushings, when they're bad, when you come to a stop, there's going to be a clunk. And when you take off gently or tough, there's going to be a clunk. Depends on which bushings are bad. Have you got any of those? No. So I went and drive her car, and I'm working her car pretty hard, and she has no broken motor mount, and she has no lower control arm bushings bad. I'm doing kind of panic stops, and she's looking at me like, are you roughhousing my car? Then I put it into reverse. I hold my foot on the brake, and I got the hood open so I can watch the engine, and I can pop the throttle. And when I pop the throttle, the engine's not moving very much, but I know what very much is. So then I put it in drive, and again, I'm watching the motor through the crack of the hood. So I'm holding my foot on the brake, and I'm going, wappa, whappa on the throttle, and the motor doesn't move. So then I put it on the rack just so that she knows, and I look at the lower control arm bushings, and I don't see anything. Now, sometimes the shop will use the word cracked. Your bushings are cracked. And then they'll also use words like weeping and seeping. Now, if the weeping and seeping is represented in this direction, it's acceptable. We've got a little bit of a seeping and weeping off the front seal of the power steering pump. Then you say to yourself, I'm never putting power steering fluid in it. I know that. But I'm just telling you, this might manifest itself into a bigger leak. So if all of a sudden you do have to start putting power steering, do you notice anything on your garage floor? No, I don't. Okay, good. When you do see, let me show you where the power steering pump is. This is where it's going to be. The power steering pump's right here. It's right in front of the passenger side tire. So if you get fluid dripping there, then that's something you need to deal with. Then the last question you should ask is this something that's going to cause me to break down? And the shop should say, no, unless you ignore all the symptoms before. I mean, if you're pouring power steering fluid into it and you got this leak that you're feeding, that's a bad deal. So those are the kinds of things that's, we've got to have a symptom associated with the suggested repair. You need to have your power steering fluid flushed. What would make me happy is if you would take me back into the shop, or if we could take my car somewhere where you would take a piece of paper and you'd pull out the dipstick of my power steering and you'd touch it to that white piece of paper. Then you'd take brand new fluid and touch it to that white piece of paper, and I'd like to see the contrast. Oh, we can't let you back in the shop. I don't have time to do that. The technician said you need a power steering flush. That's what you're going to hear. But if it's an issue, then the shop you patronize should have no problems with doing just exactly that. Come on back. Look at the fluid I'm pulling out of your power steering pump. It's kind of brown. It's got a little bit of metal in it. It's still working. Everything's fine. Here's brand new fluid. The same color, the same everything. Put it on the white paper. You can clearly see the difference. So we're suggesting, the metal doesn't bother me because it's 100,000 miles and you haven't had it flushed. So I'm going to take a lot of that metal out anyway. But power steering pumps shed metal, and it's just small amounts. So flushing your power steering system won't hurt, and it's, if you haven't done it for 100,000 miles, let's do it now, and then you can do it again in 100,000 miles. But the pump will probably go bad. When we come back, 602-508-0960.
With the polyglass wheels, the end result of the dream of Henry Ford.
Welcome back, everybody. 33 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repair is located at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, I've known him since probably the early 80s, for sure the early 80s. He's a family-owned, full-service auto repair shop. He's on the northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians, and he also has a BMW Master Technician. So if you have a BMW and you think you want to try some other kind of shop, you're more than welcome to stop by Tom's and talk to his technician or have him look. Now, they're not going to diagnose your car because he's busy, but you can talk to him for a few minutes, and there's no problem at all. So Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Let's go to Tom. Tom, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Okay. My question is about my ignition key. I bought a used Mitsubishi Outlander this last May of 2015. Still had warranty left on it, but I only got one key with it, and I didn't think too much about it until recently. I went to try to get a second one just as a spare, and the dealer quoted me a $340 payment. Is that normal? Is the key just the key today, or is it something different?
I hear this all the time, and it's totally different. We have to cut a key, and then we have to tell the computer, this key now has to work. So there's a lot more to it than just cutting a key and handing you the key. Then we have to synchronize that key. Your Mitsubishi, and I'm just talking in generic forms here, might have three keys. It'll have a master, and then it'll have two slaves. So all three of them will work in the car just fine. The computer will keep track of them in that order, 1, 2, and 3. So if you sell the car and you want to just give them one key, you could wipe out. You can't, but I can. Take 2 and 3 key and just wipe out the description of that key. Nobody usually does that, but I'm just talking in generic terms. Here's what I want you to do. The other day, ironically enough, we had a guy that came over here to do some work for us, and I asked him about the keys. And what we bring in is we bring guys in with technical equipment that we don't have, stuff that's very, very expensive. And when I went out to talk to this guy, because he was reprogramming a car for us, and it needed to be done locally. It couldn't have been done off of the internet, off of the sky, off of satellites. So he came in and he had the software necessary to bring this Ford back to the way it was, because the customer had tried to do some fancy software changes, and we just need to put it back the way it was for the customer. So I got into his van, and it was like a key place. And so here's what I want you to do. Have you got a pencil handy?
No, I'm in my car.
So okay.
I don't have.
All righty. Can you remember Mark at MarkSalem.com?
Mark at MarkSalem. Sure, I can.
Okay, Mark at MarkSalem. Send me an email. I'm going to put you in touch with my son. He knows that guy, and he's going to call him and say, how much for a Mitsubishi key and reprogram and everything? Cut a new key, be done with it. And he'll give you a price. Most of the time, I'm told, he is a lot less money. He's a mobile guy, so he's going to have everything in his van. And typically, he'll meet you. So he'll meet you someplace, maybe at your job, and you hand him the first key. He gets your cell phone number. He's going to take that key, make another one, and then program it to the car. He's going to check both keys and make sure they unlock and lock the car and all that jazz. And then he'll call you, and you can come down and pay him. So you want to make sure you want to pay him, because if you don't pay him, he'll keep both your keys and drive away. I'm just teasing you. But that's what I'll do for you, is I'll put you in touch with him. I have to make sure that he'll do what we call retail work, but I'm not quite sure why he wouldn't do that. So it's somebody that we've never seen before, and somebody that we have used a couple of different times, and somebody that we really do like, but I just can't tell you what his name is. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay.
All righty.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
All right. You're welcome, Tom. Thank you very much. Gil, you had a caller.
I did. Someone called during the break and had a question about motor oil. The question was, is there a color additive that you can add to the oil to make it read better on the dipstick?
You know, I think I would be afraid that if we tried to do that, I'm thinking out loud that maybe we put a little bit of red power steering fluid in it, but that I think that's a bad idea. I think we're likely to, whatever we put into the oil, we're going to easily throw it out of spec. So now we've got a problem that we may try to solve one problem and create a much bigger one. So I'm thinking the answer is no. I think what probably would work better is carrying a small little flashlight that's about 2 inches long. And when you pull the dipstick out, you position the flashlight to point right at the dipstick so you can see the clean oil line. So I think that might be a better option, because I know at nighttime we can see that oil line really good with a flashlight, and I'm quite sure in the daytime that will translate. Now, the other thing he could do, too, is I don't know if he would paint his dipstick white or black. I'm not quite sure which one would be best. Black, I would think, if it's a dull black, you might be able to see the line oil easier. But before I did that, I'd take a little grinder or a little triangular saw file, and I would file the add and the full mark, because you're going to cover those marks up when you paint that dipstick. So you could put black on there, and if that didn't work, you get some paint remover, some carb cleaner, you clean the paint off, and you paint it white. But you have to mark the add and the full before you do that. And I think his garage would do that for nothing. I know we would. If somebody came in and they wanted to mark the ad in the full with a notch on the side of it, we'd zzz, and we'd be done. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem here, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive service. It's family-owned and operated since 1982. Now, Chuck Knighty started it. His son Derek's running it. And Derek is a fine young man. He's a fine representative for our industry. He's trying something new where his staff and mechanics are not paid a commission or percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, he can ensure that he's not going to sell you unnecessary parts and repairs. So if you're looking for a good shop in Sun City, I want to recommend Auto Dynamics on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And if it sounds like I'm out of breath, I am, because I just ran upstairs and downstairs to get another headset and get some information, but obviously it's not really working for me right now. Nevertheless, let's go to the phones, and we're going to start with Skip. Skip, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Yeah, the great-grandson bought a Lexus because he thought that was, you know, a neat car. And he got a good deal through, you know, family and friend from somebody that died. And he was noticing when he got it that we had, it didn't steer too good. So he kind of looked around, and he noticed that the tires on one side of his rig were kind of flat-looking and not that way on the other side. So he put a air pressure gauge to the things, and on the passenger side, he had 50 pounds of air pressure, and on the driver's side, he had less than 20 pounds of tire pressure.
Okay.
Can something like that, if it goes a long time, foul up the all-wheel drive?
Yeah, it can. It can, because we need to have the same circumference on all four tires. So they have to be the same size and they have to be the same inflation. Now, did it mess up your all-wheel drive? I don't know. But
yeah.
Certainly you will in the future know. But let's start here. There's a door sticker. And the door sticker on the driver's door, or it's either on the door or it's on the pillar right next to the door. It's going to give you a tire size, and it's going to give you an inflation number. Let's make sure that those tires are all that size. So if it says P2 15, 75, 15, make sure they're all the same. That's number one. Number two, it'll give you an inflation, 35 pounds. Let's start there and put them all at 35 pounds. Let's see what we have after that. What symptoms do we have? What do we need to do? Where do we need to go? So if you can't find the sticker, then I want you to look at the side of the tire, and in very small print it'll say maximum load 1,500 pounds at 45 PSI. So I want to go to that maximum load number, and I want you to put 45 in all four tires. Because I know the tires can handle 45 because it says right on them. So that's the default number. Now, I want to tell you, on my car, I run that default number because you get best fuel economy. You get good tire wear. The tires don't run hot because they're fully inflated. There's lots of good things that happen. Plus, my wife, when she drives my truck, if she kisses a curb, a fully inflated tire will bounce off the curb. A tire that's half inflated is going to be cut by the curb. And in your all-wheel drive, you mess one tire up, you got to replace all four. Because you can't put one new tire on an all-wheel drive when the other tires are at 35%. You can't do that, so you have to buy all four. So, does he have any symptoms with the all-wheel drive right now?
No. I'm just kind of asking the question to put a little on knowledge onto him. I just kind of wondered if the little old lady that drove it before, if somebody was trying to get a repair bill down the line on her.
You know, I that's a big jump, and I want to tell you, I've never seen that before, and I'll tell you why I think that's a long-term thing. I think that could be 10,000 miles and you might be in trouble. I could be wrong. I'm sure there's somebody out there that goes, Mark's crazy, it happens at 3. Oh, we had a car at 3. We had a car at 5. The problem is nobody knows when it started. So nobody really knows how long ago it was. But I don't think I would worry about it right now. Let's get the inflation either where the sticker says or where the tire says, and let's move on from there. It should have pulled pretty hard to the low side, did it?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and now it should go straight down the road. Is it now doing that?
Yep.
Okay, then he did a great the two of you guys did a great job in identifying what it was. You always start with tire inflation. But if everything is going good and he's going straight down the road, I would sit back and just wait. There's nothing you can do to fix anything. And I would say that if you go 2,000 miles and you've had no all-wheel drive problems, I think you dodged the big one. Okay?
Very good. Yeah, we enjoy your program, and you kind of keep us thinking in the right direction.
Well, I'm treating you like I would my brother, and I actually do love my brother. Now, my sisters, I would probably lie to them.
Okay.
but I do like my brothers, but my sisters, I don't know about. But anyway, thank you very much, Skip. Thank you. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. How
morning.
Are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
I have a 2018 Altima with a 2.5 liter engine, and it has a little over 20,000 miles.
Okay.
When I turn left into a driveway or a street, every once in a while, my wheel locks. And it seems like it's more than a second, but it's about a second, and then it will continue on making the turn. And it's intermittent. It happens sometimes every day, sometimes every 2-3 days.
Okay, and when you take a tight turn, no. We're going to talk. I don't care what the dealer says or the shop says. So when you make a tight turn, how do you know this wheel's locking up? Do you hear it?
Excuse me. The steering wheel that's locking up.
Okay. All right. Now, and it doesn't happen at any other time.
No, I thought one time it did it to the right, but it's always the left. And it's usually I'm either stopped or I might be going 20-30 miles around the corner.
Okay. And does the steering wheel change tension in your hands? And does it feel like it's going to manual steering?
It just won't go any further than left. And it's like, you know, the power steering unit's not working, but then all of a sudden it'll let you continue into your left turn.
Okay. All right. Well, what you just said, there is two different things to me. You're saying that it won't go any further, and you're using the word locked up. Now, if that's the case, then I would want to check. I'd center the steering wheel, and I would turn it to the right. Just find some place where you can do this. You're in park. Center the steering wheel. I would turn right and count 3/4 of a turn or one turn. Then I would go left, and I better have the equal amount of steering wheel turns left and right from straight ahead. It's not uncommon for somebody to do an alignment and steal from one side and the other. Now, is the steering wheel straight when you drive down the road? You know the spokes on the steering wheel, is that straight?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, the second thing would be that it goes into manual mode, so it's losing its pressure. So is it from the pump? Is it from the rack and pinion? That's the question. I'm concerned about it being on one side, but I'm not going to worry about that until you fix it. So one of the things that I would do is I'd want to go drive it, because I would be able to tell, and so would most guys, that if you turn left and it goes into manual mode, that's something that we can quickly determine. If that's the case, the question is something's wrong in the rack, because the rack determines power to the left and power to the right. So I'd probably flush the power steering system and then say better, worse, or the same. If it's the same, then it's not a pressure problem, because it turns right fine. So the pump doesn't know if you're turning left or right. The pump just puts out pressure. So, and if it doesn't fix it with the flush or make it better, then I would ask them what to do next. And if they suggest, let's change the rack and pinion, I would agree. But you cannot tell them the guy on the radio said to change the rack.
Okay, well, here's the main problem I have when I take it into the dealership. Of course, it doesn't have the problem. You know, they'll have it for a few hours, and they can't duplicate the problem.
Can you duplicate the problem all the time?
No. Okay. It's intermittent.
Okay.
You know, sometimes it does it, sometimes it doesn't. I'm either going slow, I'm going faster, I'm going to the left. It locks a little bit, and then it'll continue on into the turn.
Okay. I need to know hot or cold.
Either or.
Okay.
It's mainly hot. It's mainly hot. I don't have a problem getting out of the driveway or anything like that.
Okay. So I need you to focus on that, hot or cold. That will help them. And then, obviously, somebody's checked the power steering fluid to know that it's up to snuff. There's usually
a
dipstick on it.
Well, it's electronic, so it doesn't have...
Oh, that changes everything. That changes everything.
Oh, sorry about that.
No. No. If it's... There are sensors in the steering column that tells the motor which way you want to go, and the delay is pretty insignificant. So you're going to... I know what you're concerned about. You're concerned about that this thing's going to get out of warranty and they're going to abandon you. How many times have you had it in for this?
Three times now.
Okay. You just keep doing that because you want a solid record of the same thing. Left turns, intermediate. Sometimes on left turns, it goes into manual mode or it fights with me. But I'd be looking at it with a scanner and I'd be driving it. But it also could be this. I saw the other day where I had a customer with this same thing, not with your exact car. It had a problem, an intermittent problem that come to find out Chrysler knew of the problem and they were working on a solution. So everybody was just kind of telling the customer whatever they wanted to. Oh, I couldn't duplicate it, or I couldn't do this, or I couldn't do that. But in reality, behind the scenes, Chrysler's going, ooh, we got to fix this. So there'll be a software change or something like that that will ultimately do it. Chrysler's got this transmission that's just tearing itself apart, and Chrysler's saying, don't worry about it, we're building a new one, and we're going to replace your whole transmission. That's not good enough for a lot of people. And they're thinking, okay, well, they're not. How about if they don't make it any better? The problem is, the good thing is you've got all of these work orders that says you got this problem. They're not going to be able to abandon you. So if you're out of warranty and the transfer and your electric steering fails, you had a problem way back when it was during warranty. So you have a solid ground to stand on that says this was an existing problem. You need to fix it now. So I think here's what you hope for. You pray and hope for it. It'll get worse and easier to find. Now, you also could get on the internet and just type in, 18 Ultima electric steering problems and see what happens. And you can also go to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration called NHTSA, and you could go on their website and you can query your car to see if other people are complaining about yours, because I think you'll agree it's a safety issue. So NHTSA deals in safety issues. Yeah. So go on the NHTSA site and see if your 18 Ultima with a 2.5 with electric steering is a source of concern from other people. If you have a whole bunch of people that are complaining about it, I can guarantee you that somebody knows about that from the manufacturing point of view. So it's like everything else that's a computer. They're not going to make it perfect the first time. Many times they're not going to make it perfect. So as a result of that, sometimes you just have to wait until the engineers come up with a repair. And, of course, they make a variety of fixes. Then they go out and drive the car, and then half of them pass and half of them fail. And then they got to kind of start all over again. So that's the difficulty. Thank you very much, John Charles. I'm sorry I didn't get to you. I really do apologize, but if you'll just take about a four-minute break, I'm going to grab you on the backside. So we're going to come back for another hour's worth of talk. You'll be my first caller. I'm going to say, hi, this is Mark Salem, and then I'm going to say, Charles, how are you? What can I do for you? That's how fast it's going to be. Everybody else, we have open lines available, 602-508-09. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. This is KKNT every Saturday right here on KKNT 960 AM. We're here talking about cars, and you're always welcome to join us. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. If you want to ask questions, leave me your phone number so I can call you back.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here at your service. And so if you'd like to call us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I have Dave Martin from Martin's Auto Repair sitting next to me, but I promised Charles I would go right to him.
Absolutely.
All righty. So, Charles, you're up, buddy. How can I help you?
It's actually not help. I'm a locksmith. Sounds similar to the tech that comes to you guys. I just thought I'd comment in the respect of passing on information. In regards to the gentleman on the Outlander, I think it was the 2013.
Yes, yes.
And I just wanted to convey that he'd probably be looking for pricing of from $200 to $250. I think $250 would be on the higher side, $200 would be on the lower side. I do have customers that are getting a hold of me, buying their keys, from eBay, Amazon, or I must say internet. I don't want to designate who, because I'm not actually positive. I'm getting some feedback, and those customers coming to me and I'm cutting in programming, there is a much greater frequency than there used to be of keys provided to me. That are failing for programming. Another thing that's jogged some thought was your customer that had the 2018 Nissan. Uh-huh. Starting about 2015, the proximity remotes for push, sweat, and start vehicles became very proprietary in the respect that they you could have the same FCC ID number, prior to that, with the same FCC ID number, a lot they would program and work fine. Now you have to go by model number. Otherwise, you get crazy stuff going on. I just had somebody come with like a QX. It was an Infiniti SUV, and he brought it to me. He brought his two proxies, and when I was done programming, it would, when you push the panic button, the back hatch would open.
Okay,
when you
all right, push, okay, hold on. Can you do that Mitsubishi for him?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. And about, give me a range, is that 200 to 250 kind of where you're at?
Yeah.
Are you providing the key?
Now, I would be providing, okay. For that price, I would be providing.
Okay, all right, stand by. I need to tell everybody what the hell you just said, okay? Just sit there for a minute. What he's saying is that we used to all be on Channel 7, okay? The keys back then were all on Channel 7. What he's saying now is that every single year could have Channel 42, 92, 76. He could have different channels for different years, so you can't really buy a key off the internet, because you have to buy a key on the newer model cars that's respective to the frequency, like channel 22. I'm using stupid numbers here, but everybody's getting the hint. It's like a television set. If you tune to channel 5 and you get channel 10, you got a problem. And that's what he's talking about. Now, here's what you can do, Charles. Give your phone number out to those people who might want to do it. Hopefully the key guy was Tom. But this is for everybody else. I'm happy to tell people that you do that, because that's something that nobody in my shop does and nobody of our group does. So I don't have any problem. How long have you been in business?
2003.
Okay. So you've been around the block. That makes me very happy. So you're still in business. That makes me very happy. And if you had been in business since 2 months ago, I would have been sorry I asked you to give your phone number. But go ahead and let's give that out right now.
Well, would you want me to state my business name also?
Well, the phone number right now, we got people that are driving around in their cars.
Yeah. 623-580-0410.
Now, give me the name of your shop or your business.
It's unique. Aardvark. Affordable lock.
Oh. Unique Aardvark?
No. It's a unique name, but it is Aardvark. Affordable lock.
Okay. All right. And Aardvark, is that double A?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Do you want to try to spell that?
No, I don't want to even come close to spelling.
That's the reason I came up with double A, because you can do unique double A locksmith, and you're probably going to find him.
Right.
But spelling Aardvark is, I can hardly spell my middle name. So
In today's world, everybody has their spells their name totally different than what they used to. You know what I mean?
All the marks were K's, and now they're K-E's and all kinds of stuff. But anyway, Charles, thank you very much. I've written your information down in case Tom wants to call me, but anybody else, I've got that. Mark at MarkSalem.com, and I've got his stuff written down. But thank you, Charles, for calling. Thank you very much. Let me talk about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing real quick, and then we're going to get to the rest of the callers, and we're going to start with Mark and Dan. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been in business since 1970. They've been providing expert auto and light truck and maintenance services to the Mesa area. Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa that I tell people to go to. I'm sure there's other good shops, but maybe they don't meet the criteria I insist on. You have to be in business 5 years. You have to have a clean record. You have to have insurance. You have to have a good reputation. You got to have good reviews. So we check all that out. Some people fall to the side because they don't have insurance, because they don't have insurance that covers your car when it's in their custody control. So Thompson's Auto Repair, you don't have to worry about it. I've already checked them out. So Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair, Main Street east of Stapley. They're a good place to go if you need car repair in Mesa. Mark, you're up next. How can I help you? Hi, Mark. Hello, Mark. Okay. He's not there. I thought I could hear a little bit. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go to Dan. Mark, you need to turn the radio off because we're on a delay, because if Mark Salem says something bad, then what the heck's the engineer's name?
Gil.
Gil can push a button and wipe away my bad word. So anyway, Mark, you stay there. Dan, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Okay, Mark, here's my question. I'm trying to remove some, yellow adhesive.
Okay.
And I'm using acetone. I want a little bit better product to get more of it off.
You're talking about the 3M yellow weather stripping?
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Why are you using that?
I'm not using it. It was a simple fix, but now I'm going to do a better job at it.
Okay, I'm going to write down.
It's a convertible top. I'm going to use double stick tape.
Okay, he has yellow death.
Yellow death,
that's
what we called it. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly what it's called, is yellow death. It dries hard, and that's a problem. Is this on a painted surface or is it on a chrome surface?
No, it's on material. It's actually kind of soft, but I just want to get – I got most of it with acetone, but I want it a little bit better.
I don't know. I can't possibly tell you. I can tell you what I think you should do. I think you should call a couple of body shops in your immediate area. But I'm going to think out loud here, but you're on your own here, buddy, okay? Yeah. You're on your own. I think I would take a small stainless steel brush, and I'd use the acetone.
I did that with the brass one to help. Okay. You're smart about that.
Well, I don't know the answer to that. You're the first caller in the whole wide world. I've been doing radio since 1988.
That's
now, if it was on paint, I could help you. And if
I wanted
it was on
to
chrome,
put you to the test.
Oh, no, you can. I'm going to raise my hand and say, folks, Dan just gave me a question that I can't answer. Write it down, because here's the answer. I don't know.
I was just thought maybe you had some experience, at the shop, maybe removing this stuff, and you might have used better removals.
No, I mean, you can try paint thinner.
Yeah.
Acetone, you can try that.
I did acetone.
Carb cleaner? Brake cleaner?
I can try that, too, I guess.
You need something to soften it up.
Yeah.
But I don't know
right.
anything that will soften up yellow death.
Yeah, when it gets hard, it's hard.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah,
so, Dan, I'd love to help you, but here's what I'd like to do. If you figure out a way, will you call me back and tell me?
Yeah, me too.
I'll do that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much,
Thanks.
Dan. Thank you. How long have you been in business?
I've been there since about 40 years I've been there.
And Dave Martin is flying my wingman right now. He's three blocks south of Indian School on 16th Street. He's been around for a long time. His dad, he knew Christopher Columbus, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
And your dad started in?
1971.
71.
They called him blacksmiths back then.
Oh, yeah, that's how they fix cars.
Well, there were wagons.
No. Yes, you're exactly. Oh, Dennis is going to kill you. Your dad is going to. He's already got you lined up in his sights. All righty, Mark, are you there, buddy? Dave's been around a very long time, and I've knew your dad. Yeah. I mean, I know your dad.
Yeah.
And the part I liked about your dad is he was not one of the hotheads. And I admit, at one time, I was one of those guys. In the service station arena, there was a lot of guys, and we had a Service Station Dealers Association, and our whole purpose in life was to fight with Mobil, Shell, Union 76, Exxon, all those guys that controlled us.
Yeah.
And all those guys that made more money than we did at the service station.
A lot more.
And all those guys that when they promised to deliver gas on Tuesday morning, they didn't make it. You know, that was it.
Yeah.
But your dad was calm and collected. He was always a gentleman. I saw him shake his head a lot and look down, which is – now, he did that when I was talking, and he did that when Whitey was talking, yeah. And when Jim was talking, yeah. And all those – I mean, there was times. But he was just a class act. Your yeah. dad was a class act.
Well, thank you.
I never saw him use bad words. And, you know, my wife uses bad words, so I have a good comparison.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. She uses really bad words sometimes, and usually they're pointed at me.
Yeah.
But we've been married – well, I married her when she was six. But we've been married 45 years in a month. And so you know, I'm pretty lucky. And she's like 31 years younger than me. So, yeah, she's sitting over there. She just walked in.
That's the second thing she's going to kill you about on this radio show.
I know that. You're absolutely right. All righty, 602-508-0960. Dave and I are here at your service. You run a shop on 16th Street south of Indian School. That's been around a long time, and there's lots of family associated with that. And you guys do everything from windshield wipers, oil changes, all the way up to engines, transmissions.
Yeah. And technical stuff. All the we invested in all the scan tools, the proper tools that we need to work on the newer cars with the technology.
And there's three different levels of technology. I'm going to cover them real quick. We've got the code reader. That's the thing that you buy on the internet that tells you the code. Now, keep in mind, the code tells you what state your problem's in. You still got to find the street, the city, and the house number. So you can plug in the code or go to that three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, and you can go to him, and he's going to pull a code and say you need an oxygen sensor. The chances of him being right is about the same chance of me getting Donald Trump to stop tweeting. and that's the way it is. I don't care if you're a supporter of him or not. I'm making a point.
Right, I got it.
The point is no yeah. one is going to. So the idea – now, level two is a generic scanner, which handles some cars kind of good. And then the level three is Chrysler, Ford, yeah. Mopar, all the scanners that are proprietary to the cars. So we've all evolved into that level. It's a little bit more expensive. Some of those scanners can be $3,000, $4,000, $5,000.
Yeah.
And then you have to re-software them sometimes once or twice a year. So
that's not cheap either.
And that's not cheap either. So people want to know why we charge $125 to diagnose their car, or maybe that's $75 to $125, $75 to $150, and that's the reason. The equipment we're using is very expensive. And sometimes we don't even get to buy it. We have to lease it.
Right.
And then that's an ongoing cost associated with business.
And then you have to buy the software in order to
communicate.
To communicate. Well, like if you're doing a flashing, if you're updating the computer, you have to go online and you have to buy the software so you can update the computer in the car. And they've changed all the way they're doing that now, too. You know, they're basically – it's getting more and more expensive every year.
Well, and like you said, we used to go outside and we'd go to the net, the satellite, and we'd say, hey, take a look at this car. And it'd go, oh, I see that car. I know what it is. Do you have new software for it? Yes, I do. How much do you want? Here's my credit card. And it, after an hour or so, it would upgrade the car.
Right.
Today, it's completely different.
Right.
Today, it's more sophisticated. And there are times where we've got cars sitting on voltage stabilizers for 14 hours while they talk to the cloud. for 14 hours. And we're running 100 megabytes of Wi-Fi here at this shop. So we're not down in the 20 room. We're running 100. So we had a BMW the other day. We had to reflash 14 hours.
Yeah, and we figured that out the hard way, too. The Wi-Fi in your shop is very important. And we've upgraded all of that stuff because we went through those, you know, those hard times where things, you know, drop out. You know, start over, and it just caused more problems. So what we did was we did the same thing you did. We just totally upgraded our whole shop with Wi-Fi to make it work.
And you had to. All right, when we come back, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 23 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Dave Martin from Martin Auto Repair. It's about three blocks south of Indian School on 16th Street.
Yep.
Been around a long time. Dave and his father have been around a really long time, especially his dad, Dennis. So, but let me tell you about another good shop, and it's far away from Dave's shop. It's Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell Road, northeast corner. Been around since 1987. Kurt, Jeff, and Eric. They're all master techs. Kurt runs the store. Jeff and Eric try to run the shop. They try to run the service writing. They try to do the best they can, but they're just young whippersnappers compared to the rest of us gray-haired guy, but they do a good job. And when we have them on the radio, they are really good at diagnostics. They are just really, really good. So if you live anywhere near I-17 and Bell and you don't have a repair shop, may I suggest that Kurtz Auto Repair is a good place to start. Have them do an oil change, see what happens, how you like them. And they're a good place. They've bailed me out. Dave, there was a time where I had a lady on that side of town, and she had a really sad story, and I asked her, would you look at it? She had $3,000 or $5,000 estimates. I think Kurt fixed it for $186 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I ended up a hero, and he ended up a hero. And so I like that feeling.
Absolutely. You know? It's great to network.
Yeah. I like the feeling when I am a hero as opposed to the other end of a hero.
Yeah.
The backside of a donkey, I guess, would be the good thing. So when it comes, how important is ASE certifications to you as the owner of a repair shop?
Oh, it is important. It's very important. I really think that if you're going to work in this industry, you need to perfect your craft as much as you possibly can, and that's just a stepping stone to getting you to where you get the knowledge, you get the experience. To me, I push all my techs that I hire or have been with me a long time, I push them all to make sure that they go as high as they can, L1 master tech, you know, and that's what I want them to be.
And I like how you said that. You see, you have to have the knowledge and the experience before you even take the test.
Yeah.
So they're going to, and it's like kind of like going to your doctor that's going to do brain surgery, and you ask him where he went to high school, and he said, well, he went to Tempe High.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the guys that are certified, and ASE stands for, it used to be called the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence. So it's now Automotive Service Excellence.
Right.
So you take your tests, and you have to have, I don't know, 2 years of experience?
Yeah.
2 years of experience before they'll, and documentable experience before they'll let you take the test. Then you go take the test, and it's grueling. Because if you take a master tech, which is 8 tests, you'll be at the testing place all day long.
Yeah.
Because you have to recertify every 5 years. So 8 tests times 5 years, every 5 years. But what I like about it is you're taking your expertise and you're measuring it against the industry.
Yep.
Everybody else. So if you pass transmissions, you're better than the average bear. If you pass front ends, air conditioning and heating, climate controls, alignments, suspension, gearboxes, gear ends, all that stuff. So it makes a big difference. Now, when the guys go and pass, I bet they're really proud to hang their plaque on the wall.
Yep. I just had a technician I hired probably 3 or 4 months ago. He's 23 years old, a young kid, but he's really got it. He's got a gift, and I think he was born with it. He's really a good kid, and he really gets it. And he went and just took 2 ASE certifications and brought me the plaque. So yeah, absolutely, and they're really proud of it. And you know, like you said a minute ago, you know, techs are competitive most of the time. Almost all techs are competitive, and they're that got that A type personality, and they want to be the best.
Absolutely.
And that's all we want to hire anyway, is we want people that want to be the best.
And we don't want the guys, the prima donnas,
no,
that won't help anybody, they won't help anybody. But yet, when they need help, come over here and help me pull this transmission or this fuel tank full of fuel.
Yeah.
They expect everybody at the shop to drop what they're doing. So the prima donnas are the biggest problem, I think. The fact that we have to recertify every 5 years separates the men from the boys.
Yeah.
Now, I just passed, I think, 25 or 30 years of being a master tech. Now, at my age, you get to apply for emeritus status.
Oh.
And I had to look it up. Do you know what emeritus means? Retired.
Really?
Yeah. It's another fancy word for retired.
Okay.
So if you get emeritus status, you can apply for it. And if they look at your history and you've passed all the tests, then the issue becomes, okay, we're going to put you – and I can call myself a master tech, but I don't have to take those tests every 5 years anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess they figure it's kind of like you have a master's degree. You know what I mean? It's you've done it.
Yeah.
I've been master. I started in 1991, I took my first few ASC tests. Then I never got past 4 or 5, and then finally I thought, well, I'll just try masters, and I hit it the first time, and so then I recertified. But you're right; it means everything to me.
Yeah,
I have 7 masters. I'm included, but I've got 6 guys that are masters. I'm real proud of those guys. And they've demonstrated the full circle of skills necessary to work on bumper to bumper of the cars. Now, they get licked every once in a while, just like everybody does. But the nice thing is like you talked about that young buck, he's going to be one that soaks in all that stuff.
Yep.
He's going to be the one that remembers, you know, about 4 years ago we had something like this, and this is what fixed it.
Yep.
That's the cool part of it.
Well, it is totally, and you know, this is the thing that I preach in my shop all the time is I got a guy that's been with me 35 years, and then I got another guy that's been with me about 15 years. But I preach to them, hey, we all started somewhere. Mm-hmm. Let's build everybody up, because you know how hard it is to find good technicians in this industry. So when we find a younger guy, we got to work with him.
And you know, you're absolutely right. It's got to be a team. We all got to be pulling on the same wagon. Here's what bothers me. Is when you got the prima wants to ride on the wagon,
yep.
And everybody else is pulling the wagon, and he wants to cherry pick his jobs. They don't usually last too long in my organization. 602-508-0960. Martin and I are here to help you with your car questions. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Everybody, Dave Martin and I, Dave Martin from Dave Martin's Auto Repair, 16th Street just south of Indian School, been around a long time. He's my wingman for this hour. Let me tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange, though. Automatic Transmission Exchange, we fondly call it ATE, has been in the Phoenix area since 1968. As a matter of fact, Phil came over on the ARC, I think, and he's old. But he's good.
Yeah.
And when you talk about gray hair guys, he's the one. But when it comes to transmissions, Automatic Transmission Exchange is really good. They small leaks, small performance issues, some vibrations, no matter what you've got. But if you can duplicate the problem, then stop by, but not on a Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons. They're at 40th Street in Washington. They've been around a long time. And they tell me, and Phil tells me, we don't rebuild a lot of transmissions. There's a lot of them, of the cars today, that we can replace a solenoid, or we can replace a sensor and make it work perfectly. So not everybody that comes in needs a transmission overhaul. And there's a lot of the transmission shops today that are now going into auto repair.
Yep.
And it's because transmissions of today are a lot better than they were. But I'm a little frightened about having somebody who's been doing R&R, removing and reinstalling transmissions for the guy that builds them, all of a sudden for them to dovetail or raise their hand and say, hey, I can do major air conditioning work. That bothers me. But nevertheless, you won't have to worry about that. Phil doesn't do air conditioning work. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Ray, good morning. How can we help you?
Well, good morning, sir. First of all, let me just say I appreciate what you do to elevate the status of technicians. Spent a lifetime with a father that had an automotive repair shop, and I just like the way you guys talk. I like what you say. I like the way you try and help people. So, first of all, that's just a shout out to say thanks.
Thank you.
Question is, I have a 2004 Buick LeSabre, and I just heard your reference on a transmission shop, which is why I'm calling. 2004 Buick LeSabre. The car's got about 80,000 miles on it. It was my mother-in-law's car. When it's shifting, like in and out of second gear. I need it professionally diagnosed, but it seems like there's a thump. One of the shops I took it to that I've used in the past, who I'm not confident with transmissions, seems to think it's a torque converter. Does that make any sense to you at all?
Well, no, not a
thump. It seems like it's going to shift in and out of in and out of third.
Okay. I want you to manually shift it. I want you to drive it, pull the shifter down into low, and then you, and don't let it shift a second till you send it to second.
Got it.
And I want you to manually shift it and see if that changes things.
Got it.
And the 04 LeSabre might as well be a Fred Flintstone car in our world, right, because it's a long time ago. But at 80,000 miles, I don't know why that would be an overhaul.
Right. What is the
fluid? I apologize. It's a 2006. My apologies.
Oh, it's okay, though.
I'm sorry, yeah, gave you the wrong year. Built transverse, but okay.
Yeah.
What does the fluid look like?
Well, it needs to be changed. I had it changed. We started doing it before, and I took it to the shop, and he changed it, and he put some... I'm doing good. Second floor memory. Sorry. I had it changed, and they added a Lucas... something in the transmission for Lucas, and it seemed to improve it. But now it's due for another change. My son's been driving it. I just took the car back so I can get somebody to look at it next week.
Okay,
so
now
it's due for another change.
All right, now, when they changed it, they pulled the pan, changed the filter, and put 3/4 back in it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'd probably do a flush this time around.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. Yeah. A flush is we take the cooler lines off, and we interface our machine. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start your car up, and one tech gets in the car, and he has to wave a dead chicken around his head. He honks the horn 3 times. He has to do this and do that. Meanwhile, the guy outside is forcing fluid. Not forcing. We're allowing the transmission to suck new fluid in and push old fluid out. And we're watching the clear lines. And so as we shove new in, the other stuff's coming out is brown. And we wait until the other side coming out is looks like the stuff going in. And we shut things down. Now, most all of us are going to be in the 125 to 175 range for a transmission flush, dependent on the fluid.
Yeah, totally dependent on the fluid. But I think what you said in the very beginning, I would do the manual thing first. I would definitely manually shift it first just to see what it does and see the difference. And then I would get it, I'd probably get it serviced and then see how it does after that. And if it's still doing it, you might need to run it by the tranny shop and go around the block with somebody.
Yeah, and one of the things that he said that was kind of interesting, it's a thump,
yeah,
but then he's talking about it's going in and out of gear.
Yeah.
That could easily be a low fluid level, so look at the dipstick, because as you well know, the dipstick tells you how to check it, hot, neutral, you know,
right,
or whatever. But I don't know that I'd spend a bunch of money, but I also want to tell you that I kind of respectfully disagree about transmission additives. As you already found out, it probably didn't make much difference. And if it did make a difference, the question is was it the new fluid and filter that made a difference, or was it the additive? The only time I do additives is I'll tell people to put brake fluid in their transmission because it'll swell the seals a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you got a little bit of a front seal or a tail shaft seal or a speedometer cover housing or a accumulator housing that's leaking, sometimes that will fix it by just adding a little brake fluid. And I'm talking about, you know, a third of a pint. And it doesn't make any difference if it's .3 or .4, but that's just kind of a let's see how that works. And about 50% of the time that it's reported to me, that seems to be it. But thank you for your kind comments about technicians. We agree that we were talking at the break.
Yeah.
And in reality, an ASC certified technician has 8 tests underneath his belt.
Right.
He's at master level. So that's the same in our industry as a master's degree. So if you have one test, it's like the graduation of 8th grade. Right, and 2 or 3 tests, you've graduated high school. Then 3 or 4 tests, you're kind of in the junior college, but you haven't gone all the way through. And then you get your associate's degree, and then you get your bachelor's degree, and then you get your master's. And when you're done all 8, you're the top dog.
Yeah.
And you've demonstrated your skills by testing, and you also have the experience. And so those are the ones that are more likely to be able to fix your car than the 3-whiskered kid at the auto parts store.
Well, and one of the things that they're doing that a lot of times that people aren't doing with their masters is that they're working in the shop. They're getting that experience. Like you said a minute ago, you need the experience. It's not like they learned it all on a piece of paper and then they went out there and they tried to work on a car. It just doesn't work that way. They're working in the shop. They're growing. And they're getting paid to go to school and get their masters.
Right.
So it's really, you know, the one of the biggest things that techs have to do is they have to pay for tools. And that's...
But the experience, you can't take a kid from Mesa Community College or Gateway who just did their 2-year associate's degree and think he's going to go down and become a master's. First of all, he doesn't have 2 years of experience. But second of all, it takes a while to get your master's.
Right.
So and the difference between taking the test and getting your master's is the difference of experience. You had to walk that path. You have to know how to do a Voltrop test and all that other kind of stuff. So anyway, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. It's 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Dave Martin from Martin's Auto Repair on 16th Street south of Indian School is flying wingman for me today. Dave's been around a long time, and he comes from a family that's roots go back to the 60s or 70s. 70s. Let me turn up your microphone for you right there. 70s.
Yeah, 70s. 1971, we opened a Chevron gas station down on 20th Street in Osborne. So we've been in that general area since 71. Well, okay. I mean, it's only probably half a mile from where we're at now.
But you're a second generation, and many of your customers now have their kids or maybe even grandkids doing business with you because we've had the same thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, my nephew works for me, and, you know, he's 30 years old now, and he started when he was like 12. You know, back then you could make your kids come to work and, you know.
You know what my kids laugh about? They laugh about one of the things we always had them do when they were in grade school, when they came to work on weekends or whatever. The first thing they had to do is take one of those dustpans with a handle and go sweep cigarette butts up off the parking lot. But today, my son was telling me the other day that he had his 12-year-old here, and he says, there's no cigarette butts for him to sweep up in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And there just isn't anymore. And so it's kind of funny how things change, but now we've got them going out to the fake grass and picking weeds.
That's what we did. Yeah. You know, the first job that we had when I was 10 years old, my dad, you know, I got two other brothers, and he came to us and he said, hey, there's no free lunches here. Yeah, you want an allowance, you earn it.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I got plenty of things for you to do. Of course, this is what we started. We started with pulling weeds out of this big planter out of the front there. And then he made us sort out wheel weights.
Uh-huh, yes.
And, you know, because you were, you know, they would...
The technicians
throw them in a bucket.
Yep,
and then you're dead, and they're all lead.
Yeah,
yeah. You do that nowadays and see what happens.
No, you're right.
Yeah,
you're
and right. And yeah, you know, I'm fine. I mean, I think I'm fine. I'm not sure if I'm fine, but
no. You know, there was a guy in Tempe that used to make lead hammers, and he used a piece of pipe, and he'd take all your wheel weights and make a lead hammer for you. I still have mine, and it's got to be 30 or 40 years old.
Really?
Yeah. It's just an amazing – I don't know if anybody out there does that, but they were great hammers because they were soft.
Yeah.
And you could take them with another hammer and reform – and there was a double-headed hammer.
Okay.
So you could reform it, or you'd give it back to him, and he'd put a new head on it for you. Yeah. So I don't remember who he is, and I don't remember if he's in business or not, but somebody's on the line. How can we – who is it, Gil?
It's Nathan.
Nathan, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I got a question about variable valve timing.
Okay.
My wife has an 07 Cadillac SRX with a Northstar V8, and she came home the other night and said, hey, it's making an awful rattling sound. So I pulled out my code reader, and it's giving a code for all four of the camshafts, the variable valve timing, and I have no idea what I'm going to do with that.
Well, I can't walk you through that. There's hydraulic things going on. There's electric solenoids going on. There's all kinds of stuff going on. The clatter typically means we've lost contact with the system because the default wouldn't give you a clatter. So I think in reality, one of the things you might want to do is drain the oil and see if there's a bunch of metal in there. If one or more of the camshafts is starting to come apart, we see that a lot. And when the camshaft doesn't work appropriately, there's a rough idle associated with that and some other symptoms that you haven't said anything about. But what part of town? Well, first of all, do you have a shop that you trusted? And on a 1 to 10 scale, this is an 8.
Yeah.
This is an 8.
Ooh. Okay.
So I would – this – we had one the other day that we had to go in and replace a couple of hydraulic solenoids. And when we got done, we didn't have the oil pressure we needed to make it happen. So we had to go in and replace the O-ring on the pickup tube on this General Motors, where the pickup tube and the O-ring goes bad. Well, we start sucking air instead of oil. You diagnose it by overfilling the oil pan, and the oil pressure comes up, so you know that the O-ring's bad.
Yeah.
So we had two separate problems. We just didn't know we had the second one until we got done with the first one. But in your case, what part of town do you live in?
I'm in Gilbert. I think the closest place to me would be Thompson.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Thompson's is a good guy. He's on Main and Stapley. How close are you to I-10 and Warner?
I'm at Valvista and Williams Field.
Okay, so you're along.
So it's kind of a straight shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thompson's, and I would call him and say, hey, variable out timing, a North Star. Is that something that you're going to take in? Because, like I said, the risk and reward on this is huge for the shop. Huge. So it's not a heavy reward. It's a huge risk because you can do a lot of work and come up with nothing. So, you know, the customer wants the car to be quiet, and it wants to be able to feel the variable valve timing go from 4, 6, 8. So if you give him back his car and it doesn't feel that way, then you probably just ate that repair. So that would be something that I would talk to them about. Is this something you want?
Okay. Is that a common thing where, you know, I could understand one solenoid going out or maybe even two, but all four at the same time?
Well, here's the deal. We don't use that to fix it. We can explain why after we fixed it. So here's what it was. Now, I'm going to talk gibberish now, but we have one line that feeds everything. I'm just talking gibberish now. But the line breaks. There's 8 stopping points, and it breaks at the end. And we lose oil pressure. So the real question is which part of those 8 are we going to affect, the front part or the rear part? And so we're not building any oil pressure, so we've got to – that's kind of – we're not going to worry about that. What we're going to do is we're going to go in with a scanner, not a code reader, and we're going to start looking at the oil pressure, looking at the solenoids, and looking at all that kind of stuff. So does it have the power it had before?
Well, we haven't driven it since because it will idle okay. It idles fine and quiet, but if you rev it up to about 1,500, 1,800, that's where the clatter comes in.
Okay. This could be something that's simple, like an oil pressure problem.
Yeah.
This could be something that's, you know, but I don't know. There's too many places to check and too many places to start to even guess, and I don't want to guess for you because I'm scared you're going to go out and do what I say, and then all of a sudden we've wasted a whole lot of money. So I'm going to protect you from me and tell you that I would start with Thompson's. I think that's a great idea. Okay?
I appreciate it.
Okay,
thank you, Mark.
Good luck to you. And you know what? I wouldn't mind it a bit if you would send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, after you get it fixed so I can learn from you. We do a lot of variable valve timing work, but there are times I have to pass.
Yeah.
And it's usually on a newer model car, and it's usually because I don't have what they have as far as software is concerned. So hopefully theirs is more in depth. I'm finding out that they guess as much as anybody else guesses.
Oh, I believe you're
so,
right.
So anyway, thank you very much. 602-508-0960. But let me tell you real quick about Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob is one of the best diagnosticians I know. Ellen runs the front counter, and the two of them are a pair that's hard to beat. Bob's been around the block. He's got gray hair, and he's not afraid of anything. So when I bracket repairs from 1 to 10, Bob just smiles. He says, why don't you move it to 20? And I said, why? And he goes, because I want to be at 20. I said, I'll move it to 100, and then you can be 100. But anyway, if you've got a car and the problem sounds like I've had it everywhere and nobody can fix it, I would suggest that you stop by Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, or call and make an appointment and have Bob take a look at your problem. But he does all kinds of other stuff, brake systems, auto emissions, oil changes, electrical work, batteries, alternators, power steering. He does leaks. He does all that. But he's really good at the diagnostic part. All righty, we got another caller?
Yes, Judy.
Judy, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2001 Expedition. And about 2 weeks ago, I started hearing this sound. It kind of sounds like a tapping sound, tap, 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 tap.
Okay.
And it's rhythmic. So I timed it, and it was like happening like every 10 seconds. Okay. And I just took the car out to confirm everything, and it happens like rhythmically every seven seconds, whether the car is cold or whether it's been running. And the other thing is, when you're accelerating and driving, you don't hear it. But as soon as I go to make a turn and slow down, I can hear it as I go around the corner.
Okay.
So I think the engine running kind of obliterates the sound.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you. We just, sounds are really difficult. We're both looking at yeah. one another thinking thumbs up or thumbs down. We're not saying thumbs down. We're just saying, hey, thumbs up, have you got this? And he's saying no, and I'm saying no, because we need to hear the sound. I can tell you on a 1 to 10 scale, what would you say sounds, diagnosing the sound is, where it's at? What system is it in? Engine, transmission, power steering? No, I'm asking Dave.
Probably... It's coming from underneath the hood, correct? I mean, in the front of the car?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a definite sound. I think it's present probably all the time. Accelerating, you don't hear it. Slowing down to maybe 10, 15 miles per hour, you hear it again.
Well, yeah, drivetrain's fine, but what about a blend door underneath the dash? Well,
yeah, that's why I asked if it was coming from outside. But
she's not going to be able to tell.
Right, good point.
Because you and I will have a tough time.
That was my first thought, was a blend door.
Mine was too.
Yeah, that was my first thought.
Now, here's the blend door. The blend door's coming from the center of the dash. And sometimes you can have somebody else drive, and you can put your hands underneath the center of the dash, and you can feel the noise. But it's not rhythmic, typically, like you're talking about. Yeah. We're missing a couple of clues here, because the blend door's tick, 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 tick.
No, this is more like...
I understand. I understand.
Yeah, like a heartbeat.
Yeah, I understand. It. You can help if you determine, if I turn left or right, does it change things? If speed changes it, then I need to answer that question. When I brake, does it go away? When I run my air conditioning, is it there? Is it gone? Is it worse?
So no, I don't have the air on, so okay. There's nothing on. So it's
no,
so,
but Judy, I want you to turn the air on to see if it changes the noise.
Right.
So you're helping us, because that's what we do in a diagnostic process. The first thing we got to do is kind of activate and deactivate different systems, because say, for instance, she's got a belt that's flapping.
Yeah.
Okay, she's got a belt that's coming apart. So you turn on the air, and it changes it. Yeah. And you turn the air off, and it changes it. So then we know where to go.
Right.
So that's kind of what it is. Judy, do you have a repair shop that you trust, and you could drive it by and let them listen to it?
No. And, Mark, let me go back to something you said about if somebody else drives it and I put my hands right under the center of the dash.
Yeah. Yeah, center. Center of the dash.
Okay.
And actually, right. If you turn on your air conditioning and try different modes, and then if you turn on your heater and try different modes, if you change it, then it's going to be it's something with the blend door underneath
right.
the dash.
Right.
So if you play with the climate controls and you can change it, you've saved yourself $25 or $35 right off the bat in diagnostic time, because you've done some of the work for us. And you can show us how to change it. It's not important for you to tell us what it is. It's show us how to change it and change the noise, and then we're home free. That's going to help us out a lot. Anyway, what part of town do you live in?
Well, yeah, I live in North Scottsdale, but the thing is, I go west to do a lot of errands, and I just heard you commend Larry at 38th
yeah.
and Indian School.
You could do
and
him.
And so that's not really out of the way for me.
Okay, and then Blackwell's at 40th Street and Greenway. And Tom's you can't tell that he's a gray-haired guy because he doesn't have any hair. So anyway, 602, we're undone. Thank you very much for spending your Saturday with me. On behalf of Dave Martin from Martin's Auto Repair, we thank you for spending the Saturday with me. Mark at marksalem.com. If you have anything else, let's talk about it there.